Transportation Committee called to order. Today is Wednesday, February 29, 2012. The time is 8:03. Present are Representative Feige, Representative Seaton, Representative Peggy Wilson, Representative Sisna. I just spoke with her. She may be online. And myself, Representative Alan Dick. We do have a quorum. I want to remind everybody about cell phones. Our first order of business today is a presentation by Superintendent Jacob Jensen of the Valdez School District. Following that presentation, we have reappointees to the Professional Teaching Practice Commission, and then we'll take up HB 330, State Education Standards, followed by HB 272, if there's time. So, Superintendent Jensen, thank you for joining us. Committee Aide Nick Kreitzer will move us through your PowerPoint when you're ready. Please introduce yourself for the record and be giving your testimony, sir.
Good. Hopefully I'm coming through loud and clear.
Loud and clear.
Wonderful. So I wanted to first thank the Education Committee for allowing me to present. My name is Jacob Jensen. I'm the superintendent of the Valdez City School District in beautiful Valdez, Alaska. And I wanted to take, I've got a few slides here for you. I'm going to try to get done within 8 to 10 minutes. I know you have a very busy docket today. And I want to allow some time for questions if any arise. So if we could move to the first slide where we've got the snow. So wanted to start off, we had an unprecedented year this year. We by January 13th, we had 322 inches of snow in Valdez. That was more than we've ever had in the history of Valdez, even more than the 89-90 school year where we had over 500 inches. It necessitated us having to close school for the first time due to snow. Our schools were closed for 4 days. And as you see the snow shovelers there, that is them clearing off just level with the parapets. The parapets go down another 18 inches. So there's about another 18 inches worth of snow that you can't see that's under there. And since we have shoveled this, we've now been going back and using saws, chainsaws, and trying to chip out some of that ice because the snow loads are still quite heavy. So I just wanted to share also with the commissioner was gracious enough to allow us to close school or to declare an emergency on one of those days. And so we're making up 3 of those 4 days. And what we ended up doing is taking teacher in-service days and having school on those days, and our teachers elected to have our in-service days actually conducted on Saturday. So a big thank you to our teachers. That way we didn't end up going past the end of our regularly scheduled school year. Next slide, please. The next few slides just have some demographic information for the committee. As you see with our demographics, we are predominantly a Caucasian school district. About 17% of our student population are identified as special needs. We tend to have a higher special needs population due to the fact that Valdez at one time was home to a special education school. And so we're known as having excellent special education services. Consequently, we get a number of people that move to Valdez to participate in our special education. That's why our numbers are at 17%. Something that's surprising is that when you think of Valdez, we tend to be a rather well-to-do city, but about 28% of our students come from economically disadvantaged. We're not up there with some of the rural bush communities, but almost a third of our kids are on free and reduced lunch. Next slide, please. And I apologize that I don't know how big your screen is, but we tried to put a lot of information, so hopefully you have a paper copy. These are our demographics that we look at each and every year. This takes a cohort of students that started since the third grade and takes them up to our sophomore year in high school for last year. As you can see, we've done pretty well on our test scores. We've kept them relatively high. As with most districts, our kids start off doing really well, and as they get older, they tend to perform a little bit less well, and we're trying to actively address those concerns. Next slide. Again, this is the same information, except this is a junior class. This is fourth graders. And I wanted to point out something that's interesting that talks about excellent teaching. If you look at mathematics, and that last year under mathematics in the 2011 year, That was a year where we had a very senior mathematics teacher retire, and we saw our test scores drop precipitously due to a change in teacher. And so obviously excellent teaching makes for excellent test scores, and so I wanted to point that out. It's something that when we looked at that, we were surprised. Next slide, please. With our district report card data, I just wanted to give you an idea about where we are performing. Obviously, our test scores, again, are very, very high. We're not where we want to be. We're not to 100% yet, but we're trying to get close. Next slide. Our writing assessments. Also, we worked very hard on those. You know, we're trying to do as well as we can do. We're seeing a little drop there in fifth and sixth grade, but then we really have reinforced our efforts at the junior high to try to improve those test scores, and even up in through ninth and tenth grade, we're still doing quite well, close to 90% proficient on our writing in high school. Next slide, please. Mathematics. Again, we're doing well. We see that as kids get older, the test scores tend to go down. You know, that is something that we see across education where, you know, kids, for whatever reason, sometimes they don't think the tests are as important as they might when they're younger, but we see the test score data going down. If of all of our test scores, our math scores tend to be our most difficult area. And so we've been really working with, we've got a new curriculum instruction director that we hired last year, and we're working on trying to improve that by a better articulation between the schools. Next data, please. I want to show our graduation rates. Again, this is a small slide, but our attendance rate is right at 93% across the district, which we're very proud of. And our graduation rate, we fluctuate between where we're at right here, which is 88%, and sometimes we're up to 96%. The thing that I wanted to point out that was excellent for this year that you've got on your slide is that our students with disabilities, we actually graduated every single student with an IEP that year, which is not always the case. We currently have a number of fifth-year seniors, a number of sixth-year seniors, and we actually have a student who's almost turning 21 who has come back from dropout status and is trying to finish before he turns 21. But we're very proud of the fact that our students with disabilities do very well, and we're working hard to get them to graduate. Next slide, please. Just wanted to give the committee some information about our financial status. As you see, the city of Valdez has been very, very supportive to us, starting in financial year 10. And then financial year 11, we got a little bump up. And then as you see, for the last 3 years, the city has been holding us steady at the financial number that you see there in front of you. They've asked us to look at areas where we can trim costs. They've asked us to look at areas where we might have some efficiencies. And so we've been doing that. The state money, as you see, has been relatively consistent. You know, we had the bump last year with the one-time monies that was sent to us, which we're very appreciative of. We're concerned about this upcoming year. Obviously, we're looking at about $300,000 difference approximately from where we were last year from the state to where we are now. And our numbers from the city are keeping it straight. So we're looking at a cut of about $575,000 this year. And we're working closely with our teachers and our faculty to see ways that we can cut. As you see, our enrollment's been relatively steady over the last 3 years, and we're projecting a loss of about 11 students next year, but we won't know until kindergarten actually starts whether that's going to be the case. Our utilities have consistently gone up about $200,000, and we're anticipating that for next year. So you couple the same money from the city, currently less money than last year from the state, and then rising utilities, and that's where you come up with our deficit of $575,000. Next slide, please. Just wanted to, again, give the committee some more information. We have about 44 teaching positions in Valdez. We have a number of others certificated with counselors and curriculum directors and things, but Over half of our teaching staff has been in Valdez for more than 16 years. The vast majority of our teachers have master's degree in education. When you look at our salary schedule, almost everybody on our salary schedule is at the lower right-hand corner, which we're very proud of because it shows that once people come here, they really don't want to go. I mean, it's a wonderful place to live and work. Our teachers are always looking and working with us on things that we can do better. One of the things the district is currently exploring is the possibility of a four-day school week. It's been something that's been floating around Valdez for about 15 years, and this fall I asked the board permission to put a committee together. And so we've got a committee out that has been doing the research. We're not looking at a four-day for any sort of monetary savings. Typically, districts have looked at that in the lower 48 as a way to save money. What we've seen is that there's not a whole lot of savings that happen with that, but with our students traveling, we see, you know, approximately 30% of our kids gone on any given Friday, be that for sports or a lot of times where people make their appointments in Anchorage on Friday. And so we're looking into that. It's not something that's been fully recommended to the board. However, there is a committee out there, and we're excited to try to investigate and see if it's something that would work for Valdez and for Alaska. Next slide. Our high school enrollment is 225, and we've been steady on that for the last few years. We've got career and technical education. We've been trying to work on where our students have always performed very well, but we've seen an increase in the desire for career and technical education. So in 2010-2011, we started a new culinary arts program. We started that as a half-time position, and then in 2011-2012, we bumped that up to a full-time position. We're currently looking at remodeling the kitchen because we've been trying to do that in an old home economics room, and it's not meeting the needs of the kids. We need to look at more commercially viable equipment. We've also got a very, very strong partnership with Prince William Sound that we've had since 1995. Next slide, please. Our junior high, I love our motto here, success is the only option. The enrollment, actually, it's gone down a little bit the last few years. It's just been a population bubble. Our current junior high is the oldest building we have in the district. It was built immediately after the earthquake in 1964. And we're looking at doing a bonding issue with the city to replace that building. Our students have something that's interesting about the junior high is we offer the option of them taking a core academic class in a single-sex classroom. We've got male classrooms, female classrooms, and then mixed classrooms. And that's something that we've been doing for the last 5 years, and it's been very successful. We've seen that especially the female students really enjoy having an all-girl classroom. They feel as if they're able to communicate better with the staff, and they feel safer without the distraction of the boys. The boys tend to feel the same way. We've also got an After the Bell program that tutors students, and we're very proud of that. It runs every day. It gives the students something to do after school, and then we provide busing home. Next slide, please. Our Herman Hutchins Elementary School, our current enrollment is right at about 350, and it's been relatively steady. We have a pre-K preschool program that is a special ed program that has typical peers involved in there. Typically, we have about 10 special ed kids and maybe 5 typical peers. We're looking at remodeling that next year and possibly expanding that to have 2 preschool programs, an AM and a PM program. Because with class sizes of 15, it tends to get a little large, especially with the high-need special ed students we have in there. We also have enrichment classes that happen twice weekly. We have a full-time technology teacher. We have a full-time PE teacher. We have a full-time counselor that teaches a positive action curriculum. We have a librarian, and we also have a music program, and all of those programs happen during the school day, which we're very proud of. We also have a full-time gifted and talented person that works with our students at the elementary school. Next slide. As far as curriculum and professional development, we've been working, as I said, we hired a curriculum and instruction director last year, and we've been working really hard to review the curriculum of the the top three schools in the nation and those blue ribbon schools and see what they're doing and see if we can model our programs after theirs. We've got a six-year curriculum cycle that we just finished the first time going through 6 years, and now we're starting over again. And that's been very effective in providing new and appropriate curriculum to our students. We always try to hire the best possible teacher, and we're very fortunate in Valdez that people really want to work here. So we haven't had difficulties retaining staff, and we typically, when we open a position, we get multiple applicants, which we're very proud of. Next slide, please. Just as an interesting item, I wanted to throw this in there. We currently attend school quite a number of days more than the state requires. We have a feeling that we really to educate our kids, and so we try to do the best that we can, and our teachers and our teachers union have worked closely with us on making sure that kids get the best education possible. And next slide. Just wanted to again thank the committee for allowing us to come and present and showcase some of our programs. Hopefully I was able to get through relatively expediently, and I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Okay, thank you, Superintendent. Well, you certainly clarified something to me. I'd heard that you were going to a four-day school week, and I thought it was for financial reasons, so you really helped me clarify that. Questions from committee? Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Morning, Jacob. How are we doing today?
Wonderful. Thank you, Eric.
All right. Hey, from reading the newspaper, I understand the idea of a four-day week has kind of been floated out in the committee, or not the in the community. What kind of feedback have you gotten from the folks in town?
Well, what's been interesting actually is that we're not finding, as is a lot of times when you deal with things like this, we're not finding any sort of middle ground. We're either getting people that are just excited that want to do it. Why can't we do it now? And then we're getting people that are very, very opposed to it. If you were to ask me, I would say probably 80% of people have been very positive. 20% of people have been having a number of questions, and a lot of those questions have to do with what are we going to do with those students on Friday? That if we were to go to a four-day week, what happens to those kids, specifically the elementary kids? And, you know, if you've got daycare issues, and you know, what do you do if you've got high school kids that have nothing to do on a Friday, and those, we haven't solved those issues because we haven't yet come to a conclusion that's something we really want to pursue. So we're looking to have these community meetings, then bring forth a recommendation to the board, and then start to address those concerns.
Thank you, Representative Wilson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Jacob, in your junior high, I see that this is the first time I've seen it in all the schools that have come before us that each student has a personal education plan where
yes,
they
ma'am.
Establish their goals and development and develop a plan to achieve those goals, and that's for the 8th and 9th graders. Can you go into that a little bit and tell me how you, because that takes a lot of effort, and so how do you think it's going, and would you recommend it to other schools?
It's a wonderful program. What happens is that in our junior high title is a little bit of a misnomer. It's actually just 7th and 8th grade. It doesn't actually go to 9th grade. So as students enter in 7th grade, they sit down with their teachers and with the principal. Unfortunately, last year due to budget cuts, we had to eliminate the counselor position at the junior high. But they used to sit down with the junior high counselor, and they would talk about where do they want to go, what are the goals that they need. And then the other piece of that plan that's been very, very important, as you see our scores have gone up quite a bit at the junior high, is they sit down and they actually talk with the students about their test scores. And they talk about, you know, you're performing at this level. Do you have a bad day? Is math hard for you? What do you need? What supports do you need? And then they work continually with their teachers and with the counselor and with the principal to improve upon those. So I would say if staffing is available, it is a fabulous, fabulous program. We've had some difficulty in that last year we had to eliminate that counselor position, so it's we're still getting the job done, but it's fallen much more on the teachers and the principal's shoulders to accomplish it.
Follow up, Representative Wilson?
Yes. So you're trying to do it this year, but because you don't have a counselor, are the teachers taking over to do that then, or how are you doing it?
The teachers are taking over, and the principal's been taking over. As you see, we have a relatively small school. You know, I have to be careful because, you know, 99 students in Alaska sometimes is a large school. But it's a relatively small school, so we've got the teachers have been working on it, as have the principal. So we've been able to accomplish this. We just aren't able to talk to the kids quite as much as we were with our full-time counselor.
Could you keep us informed if you feel that that without that counselor, you know, you might be able to do it and pull it off without a counselor, but kind of keep us informed so that we have an idea of how this year went compared to last year without the counselor.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to do that, Representative Wilson.
Thank you.
And this is Representative Seaton. Chairman Dick had to leave, so I'm taking over for a few minutes here. One of the other things on the junior high is a mentoring advisor, reading study skill time. So that mentoring, can you just give us a mentoring and advising piece? Is that coordinated into what you were just talking about, or is that a separate time set aside and each student has someone that's assigned to individual students throughout their career at the school?
Absolutely, and it does go very much in line with what we were talking about with Representative Wilson about that's the time where we sit down with the students, and again, in the past, the counselor would pull students out individually. What we've been doing now is the teachers have small groups that they meet with, and it's kind of like a homeroom that you would think of where they kind of sit down and talk about study skills issues, career plans, directions where they want to go, what needs they might have. They bring in people from the high school to look at doing, you know, choir, and it's really more of a homeroom concept where the teacher can have one-on-one time with the students and small group instruction.
And does that group of students stay with that teacher through their through both years in the school, or is it a different group of students with a teacher each year?
Typically, it's a different group of students with a teacher each year. But as we only have two grade levels, you know, we kind of split the seventh graders up and the eighth graders up. And so seventh grade, they have one set of teachers. Eighth grade, they have the other. So they're able to interact with more faculty.
Okay. And I just had one more. With the career tech emphasis as you're going, has WorkTees been advantageous to you? How have you integrated that into there? And is everybody aware that those work key levels will be on the transcript?
Yes, and we utilize work keys quite extensively, and we are very aware of that. It has been very helpful for us, and it's been interesting as the, you know, we've typically been a very college-bound area, and we've seen this transition to more of a career and technical education, which we're trying to meet that demand by expanding our programs.
Great, thank you. Are there any further questions? Well, we sure appreciate your presentation, Superintendent Jensen, and thank you for the information. We will say goodbye now, and we will go to the confirmation hearings, and our first one will be Jill, and I'm not sure whether it's X or XE. Would you please introduce yourself on the record and go ahead and tell us why you'd like to be on the or what your experience has been on the commission and why you're willing to serve again. Okay, thank you. So I guess she was not online yet. So Mr. Pomdolfino, would you I think you probably heard the question, and if you would go ahead and introduce yourself to the committee and some background and why you would like to be reappointed.
Sure. Luke Pandolfino is my name. I'm the principal at King Career Center in Anchorage. Enjoyed listening to Superintendent Jensen's remarks about career education, vocational, so that's an aside I know. I've been in the Anchorage School District for 21 years, 10 years in the classroom, and 3 years as an assistant principal, 7 years as the service high school principal, and this is my first year at King Career Center. Before that, I was I wore a blue collar. I learned a carpentry trade in Nome, and then moved down to Anchorage and earned my master's degree and began in education. If I'm reappointed, be my second term PTPC. I think it's just a very important job that we hold those in our profession to the very highest standards, ethically speaking. And it's a fascinating group of people to work with on the commission. And Patricia Truman runs an excellent show there, if you will, as the executive director. I just feel it's a professional responsibility of mine to be involved in education from the classroom up through administration and on the commission.
Thank you. And would you just explain a little bit what the duties are of the commission?
Yes. Well, I think our main duty is to hear ethics complaints lodged against certificated professionals in our state and decide upon the merit of those complaints and decide, if appropriate, a level of sanction. And the staff of PTPC, Patricia and her assistant, do much of the research and legwork, and they present the cases to us 3 times annually, and we hear them, and we decide on appropriate sanctions if warranted.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions for the applicant? Representative Wilson.
Thank you. My question is just out of curiosity, I guess. Do we have a lot of that happening in Alaska, or are you called very often to do this? About how many a year do you have to sit before and hear both sides of the story?
I believe that because we have excellent leadership on the PTPC, I think it's fair to say that few cases come to us where we have to hear both sides, where a sanction is contested. The sanction is recommended or brokered, if you will, from the executive director with the culprit, if you will, and if there is no disagreement on the from the certificated person's standpoint, then we review and either agree or disagree with the sanction. And sometimes we disagree. Most of the time we agree because of the great work that Ms. Truman does. Occasionally there will be, I'd say, few times a year, and we meet 3 times. 1 or 2 times a year, we'll have to hear a case through. We'll have to, there'll be testimony, and we'll have to make a decision based on the testimony and the evidence presented from the staff. That doesn't happen often, fortunately, because it's quite an extensive and time-consuming and costly process, I guess.
So how many about a year do you have that are that you just kind of
uncontested?
Yeah.
Yeah. There are anywhere from a dozen to 3 dozen 3 times a year that we and these are sanctions. These are breaches of contract. You know, the ethics violations run the gamut from a breach of contract, walking away from a contract, which happens probably more often than any other ethical lapse, if you will, that people will leave their job after they've signed a contract and for whatever reason moved to the lower 48 Florida, and walked away. And I guess the majority of the cases are breach of contract. But then there's everything else to very egregious ethical lapses, illegalities, theft, inappropriateness with students, crossing student teacher boundaries, things like that. But I'd say several dozen, certainly several dozen a year, probably between one and two dozen each meeting that we hear and review.
Okay, thank you.
Is there anyone else that has questions? I guess a little bit of definition. So it's mainly ethical, so that's not looking at teacher performance. If there's a underperforming teacher that hasn't, with help, hasn't picked up the game, does that come to you, or is that simply a district and contract matter?
The latter. It's a district matter for underperformance. If there are performance issues that aren't based on ethical lapses, then we don't hear those.
Okay, thank you very much. Seeing no further questions, I will. We'll go at ease for a few minutes. We're waiting for another confirmation hearing. Okay, we're back on the record. Thank you. We are finished with the interview. Thank you very much. Our job here is just to review qualifications and forward names for consideration by the legislature in a joint session. So we are not taking a vote supporting or opposing any nominations for confirmation. So. But we thank you very much for your answers, and we appreciate it, and we will be having a motion later. We're waiting on one other person to come in online for confirmation hearing. So we'll be at ease for a few minutes. But thank you for joining us, Mr. Pondofina.
Education Committee will come back to order. Oh, and we will pass it, actually, at ease. We'll give it back to the chairman.
Representative Pruitt, will you move the Confirmation Committee report for the Professional Teaching Practices Commission for the from committee?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. The second
person
is calling in right now.
Well, wait.
Come on, go
deep. It is. We'll come back to order, and we'll next hear from Jill X regarding her reappointment to the Professional Teaching Practice Commission. Jill, are you online? Do you hear us? Jill, are you online? Do you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, we do have your resume in our folders. You want to tell us a bit about yourself and why you want to continue on the Professional Teaching Practice Commission?
Certainly. I am a teacher for the North Slope Borough School District. I have been here for 19 years, and I absolutely love teaching in rural Alaska, and have been provided several opportunities to be involved in education in different ways. classroom teacher, reading coach. I spent time as president of our local education association, and several years ago, then I was appointed to the PTPC, and that opened another door to education, and as you well know, it's a complicated beast with lots of parties involved, and I've always been an advocate for due process, and I feel that the Professional Teaching Practice Commission takes that to heart very, very much. So I've appreciated my time spent in the past on the board and would like to have an opportunity to do another term.
Okay. Thank you, Jill. I have heard good stories about your participation. Any questions from committee? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On your application, it doesn't show which is your current job.
Or at least I am currently teaching middle school in a team teaching situation here at Harold Kavilic School in Cocktobic.
Okay.
Okay, any other questions?
Thank you.
Any other question from committee? Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ma'am, what possessed you to leave Houston, Texas to come to Beryl?
I'm one of those people that seem to be happy wherever I land. I'm originally from, I went to school at Montana State. Thought I would teach in small town Montana and work myself up into one of the larger towns. But during my senior year in college, I got to travel and did my student teaching in England, and I realized that there is more to the world than Montana, although I love that state. I came back and decided I wanted to go to the biggest place I could, attended a job fair, and went to Houston, Texas, at that time the 10th largest city in the nation, and I loved it. Had no intentions of leaving, but due to a change in my family, I had to go back and help my mom, dad, and after that, I decided to go someplace totally different, and ended up in Barrow, Alaska. First day I was in my classroom, I watched a snowy owl fly by, and I thought I could get used to this, and I loved Barrow, loved the science that's in that community. The kids, my classroom was divine, but I like to change after a little while, so 15 years later I decided to move to a smaller place, and you know, my students and I watch polar bears out of our classroom window, and we're happy as pigs in mud, so I love Houston. Best 4th of July ever. Those tall skyscrapers and the fireworks showering down. Nothing beats that, but you know, and fireworks here in Alaska, 4th of July, not so much, but we make up for it in New Year's.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jill. Any other questions from committee? Well, we're really glad to have you here in Alaska. I'm glad you decided to stay. If there's no other questions, Representative Pruitt, will you move the Confirmation Committee report for the Professional Teaching Practice Commission from committee?
Mr. Chair, I move the Confirmation Committee report for the Professional Teaching Practices Commission from committee. This does not reflect any intent by any of the members to vote for or against any of these individuals.
Is there any objection? Seeing none, these names will be moved forwarded to a joint session for consideration. Okay. Our next order of business is HB 330, State Education Standards. We're going to hear from Commissioner Mike Handley, and I have a presentation. Hopefully I'll have time. I received no amendments from committee members, though I had some thoughts about the makeup of the task force. My intention is to get Commissioner Handley's testimony and my testimony, and then we'll take public testimony today if we have time, and we will hold the bill. We're certainly, it's a big subject, and we don't want to hinder any other opportunity for folks to express themselves. So,
Mr. Chairman, are we also going to hear from the Department of Labor?
not today, but that's certainly a good...
I'm just requesting that we do, because we're assigning this to them, that we... Thank you.
Good suggestion. Thank you. Okay. Commissioner Hanley, would you want to come forward and give us your insights, sir?
Thank you, Chair Dick. For the record, my name is Mike Hanley, the Commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development. I thank you for the opportunity to just to conclude some thoughts in regards to the vetting of standards. I would like to just back up just a little bit to what we heard in testimony previously the other day in regards to. It was more in regards to the vetting of standards than it was really to the specific bill. I know we heard from Stuart McDonald from Kodiak and Peggy Cowan from the North Slope. Just as a point of interest, both of those communities, both of those superintendents have had five members of their staff of their school district be a part of this two-year process of developing the standards that we have going before the State Board at this time. The other thing I don't think was clear, and Stuart McDonald made a point of it, is moving deliberately and slowly and not rushing into anything. And I think we've been exhaustive. I think we've done prudence and had a lot of integrity in the process of developing our standards. Even after standards are adopted by the State Board, if they were to be adopted in June of this year, they won't be assessed until 2016. I think we have moral and legal obligations. We can't just change standards and then test a child on a standard that they haven't been taught to. So we need to give them that window. So, for instance, a freshman coming in would need his high school years before he was assessed on that. So 2016 is actually the time frame for assessing any new standards. So we won't be rushing into that as well. There did seem to be a little bit of confusion between the difference between curriculum and standards. And I know that we heard a lot about CTE, and I know we heard Chip speak to engineering programs and STEM. Both of those, we currently have great models of CTE around the state, and you've heard several of them in presentations from different districts. Currently, what's taking place is the CTE teaches to the state standards through that particular model. So they are not exclusive of each other. We can surely have a CTE focus or a theme-based focus and teach to the standards in that model that engages kids in a direction that they want to go. The same with STEM. We have science and math standards that we have STEM programs around the state. We actually have engineering programs built into high schools as well. And I also like to consider the ANSEP program, which is doing tremendous jobs with a lot of our native students, aiming kids for science and engineering. Doing that through a focus on the state standards and actually going beyond what the standards set for a target. In regards to the vetting process, the legislature has actually already set a vetting process, and that is how regulations are promulgated. There is a process of the development of standards. They go to the State Board of Education. The Board of Education has an obligation to put them out for public comment for a period of 3 months. This State Board, and I think I mentioned it last time, this State Board has recognized the importance of these standards and any standards, and has extended that time period to 6 months. In that six-month period, rather than being just receptive and waiting for comments to come in, we have actually we have our state system of support, and those are our content coaches that work in a lot of our rural districts and our intervention districts. And they have regular meetings when they get together and discuss, you know, how to best improve their performance and move forward. We've actually asked them to not have their last meeting and instead work in their districts in regards to getting input on these standards and sharing what these standards are all about. So we're getting that input out through all of our content coaches to some of our small rural schools. And we do have five community meetings that will be scheduled in five of our largest communities to also address this specific, with specific focus on business and the working careers. So I feel like we have done an exhaustive job, and we are really working hard to make sure that we have input from all of our stakeholders. And that really is the key, is that we have a process that is open to all of the stakeholders. The only thing I think I would say at this time is in regards to the bill is just an observation. And I did have a question last time that I mentioned to you, but the observation that I do have is that we do have a very open process for all stakeholders to be a part of now. It does seem that the makeup of the committee is missing some stakeholders. I don't see anyone from the university on the task force. I don't see any educators on the task force. And I actually don't see any representatives for your biologists, for your engineers, for your architects, you know, your higher level jobs, the ones that Chip spoke specifically to. I don't see representatives for that as well. So I would have some concern about taking a process that basically is including all stakeholders and not including all stakeholders in a separate process. But I'll stop there and be willing to answer any questions you may have.
Before, Commissioner Hanley, thank you for this. And I did apologize in the last meeting, but apparently I sometimes ask some people to listen. I did mention that I had left out university people and superintendents, and they were intended to be part of that task force. So apparently I talked fast and people could listen. So, but that's absolutely a total oversight on my part. And okay, Representative Wilson.
I have about three questions that I thought of while you were talking here. If I heard you correctly, I heard you say that that it's not if we want to accomplish what Representative Dick wants to accomplish, that we don't have to change the standards, we need to change the curriculum. Is that what you said?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson. There just tends to be a conversation. When conversations take place, there tends to be a melding of the two. And just to clarify, what it sounded like last time is that people were getting confused CTE and curriculum confused with standards. We could still maintain high standards and do that through a CTE model. So they're not the same. And that doesn't speak to this bill per se. It just speaks to the difference between standards being the target, curriculum being the how to get there.
Okay, I've got a series of that. Okay, what's CTE?
I'm sorry, it's the Career and Technical Education. It was the VOTEC.
The STEM part? Oh, no, oh, okay.
It's the VOTEC.
Okay, it's the VOTEC part.
Correct, that we call it Career and Technical Education now, but yes, it's those career academies, it's the things we've been hearing about, Wrangell building the aluminum skiffs and the construction academies, those types of things.
Okay. So I thought you said in connection with STEM, because you always already have the standards. What did you mean then? I mean, you were, when you talked and you mentioned the curriculum and the standards, I'm a little confused yet of what you exactly meant.
Okay. Through the chair, I apologize. As an educator, I should know better and be more clear. The standards that we have, that we're working on developing, the ones we currently have, they are just simply where do we want our kids to be when they are done, what skills we want them to have when they're moving on beyond high school. That often gets confused in how to get there. And there are many ways to get there. One of them can be through a career in technical education, the VOTEC model. They can incorporate that into the welding and into the development of SCIF. The STEM, science, technology, engineering, math, that's also, although that's not really a program, but that's more of a curricular type of a thing too. A STEM program that focuses on those areas, which probably biologists and engineers would need, there can be a focus in that regard to aim and address all the math and science standards, as well as the writing standards. But there are different ways to get to the target. So I don't know if that clarifies.
Yeah, I guess I was trying to figure out how you meant that to apply for or against the bill.
Oh, in that sense, the bill is discussing, talking of a task force. So I was just building on the conversation of the standards, which is really not a conversation that addresses specifically this bill. My only conversation in regards specifically to the bill is that I believe we have an open, exhaustive process at this time, and I think the question I asked last time is then changing it to have a smaller task force to determine a different method is one that I questioned. That's all.
Follow-up?
Please do.
Okay, now, if I understood you right, you said that the standards that we're looking at, that you're looking at right now, and that you've extended from 3 months to 6 months, how many comments have you gotten so far? I mean, has there been very few? Have there been a lot? Just give me I don't need to know the exact amount by any means, but
right.
Has there been a lot or not very much?
I would have to look. The ones that come in just online that you can look at and say, oh, I can submit my comments, under 100.
Okay.
We've held two webinars, and I don't have the numbers of how many people participated in those webinars.
Okay.
Could I ask a follow-up on that? And just for our information, so we can, if we had some indication as to whether the people who are calling in with comment, if they were educators or non-educators, if there's some way to determine that, that would really help.
Okay.
Go ahead. Representative Wilson.
From what I understood you said is that it's going, even after we adopt the standards, it'll be several years because we have to change the way we test, because we have to make sure that we're testing toward the standards. Did I hear that right?
That's correct. We won't actually assess them until we'll keep the assessments we have in place now. We won't change that assessment for 4 years. That allows us to build an assessment or utilize an assessment that will address those standards. But that's correct. So it'll allow teachers that transition time of starting to incorporate the new standards and shift into a new gear and giving students a new focus towards those new standards.
So follow-up. Is this my last part? We're going to have to, because it costs a lot of money to do this, we're going to have to spend quite a bit of money to change those tests. And so I assume that we're going to have to change the exit exam tests also then.
Through the chair, that would be correct. If the exit exam is still in place, then, because that's a function of the standards too. That's a function of what's been identified as, mm-hmm. The skills students need. So, yes, the assessments need to be in alignment with your standards. They need to be those benchmarks that aim towards the goal.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Plagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Ward, this bill is sort of a debate of just to the existing philosophy of the whole standards system. And once again, I'll use my manufacturing example. The educational system manufactures a product for use by the customers. And correct me if I'm off base here, but my perception is that the standards are essentially the specifications for that product. Is that an accurate analogy?
It's pretty close.
Okay.
If students are kind of a product, then yes, that's pretty close.
And so you have a manufacturing process that leads to an end product, and that end product meets certain specifications. Now, in the rest of the world, the specifications on something like that are set by the customer. The customer meets with the manufacturer and says, "I need a widget that's got
these characteristics. And the manufacturer obviously has the expertise in how to make the widgets and can adjust their manufacturing process to get the end results. But the specifications are still set by the customers. One of the, stepping back from how we do things, it seems the way our educational system with the way the standards are created currently, it's the manufacturing company that's setting the standards for the product as opposed to the customer that we're developing the product for. So in that sense, I don't have any problem with, you know, you guys figure out how to come up with a product, but I am kind of leaning towards supporting this because basically it makes sense for the customer to determine what the specifications of the product are. And then we can debate on, you know, who needs to be on the committee and all that. But is my analogy, is there anything wrong with my logic as I've described it?
Through the chair, Representative Feige, if we were specifically speaking to a specific product for a specific purpose, the analogy would hold.
Okay.
The challenge becomes, I envision the children in school have got 1,000 doors open to them, opportunities open to them. And we have a responsibility to keep as many of those doors open as possible, if not all of them. So we need to find a way to teach to a level that will allow them to continue training in any area they pursue. So if the customer were, you know, I don't know that we could get all the customers together, or we could maybe try to get all the customers together, which are all the employers, and then try to find a, you know, I don't think we want to settle for the least common denominator, though. Let's say a customer is a business owner, and my first degree is in business. That may work for me. You know, I also took calculus, and I also took other things that I didn't need in my business, but I was glad that I still had that opportunity to go pursue engineering if I chose to. So I think we need to find not a lowest common denominator, but a level, a foundational level that allows students to still have all those doors open to them and choose where they want to go. So I think there is a danger in saying, this is where most of our kids will go, and aiming them for there and essentially closing doors over here.
Follow up, please do.
Could part of that be simply how we write the specifications for our product? I mean, what you're advocating for, and it's a good point, is basically the product needs to be pretty flexible mm-hmm. by the time it leaves the educational system. And I guess I would translate that as meaning you want to teach these widgets to think on their own and to be able to, so that those would be, you know, specifications such as needs to be able to read and understand, needs to be able to compute math on its own. Can we achieve that by simply being more flexible in our standards, or being more broad in the standards specifications that we set?
Through the chair, I think we probably have to look at a specific example. Potentially. I think our standards are relatively broad now, and the places where we look that I consider are the comments that we get from the workforce now saying our kids don't have foundational skills and the fact that they have to compete globally for jobs even in Alaska because employers are bringing people in all the time. I think it's a responsibility of ours to say, okay, what skills do our kids need to compete with those other kids, even if it's going to be in their own community. So that would always be a conversation of how broad should we be and how specific should we be. I don't know that I could give you a generalized answer to that.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Commissioner, if I just make a point here, if you could clarify, I believe we all have in our packet this list of people who participated in the committee that helped to write these standards, and I see on this graph that I have here that there's a very good representation statewide. I believe this is in your packet from last year, last week.
just have to find it.
Okay. While we're looking, as I look through this, and I, my staff did ask your staff just for the names of people that were involved. And as I went through this, I saw a wonderful representation throughout the state. But in terms of, I know that you invited people from AFL-CIO and all the industries, but in terms of actual participants, I only see Take Flight Alaska from Anchorage. I see nothing, it's almost exclusively schools that actually did participate in the writing and the vetting of the standards. And so, I guess my thought is, and we're not going to wrap this up today. So, if you would have, if you do have any names of participants who are actually non-school people, that would really really help me in my understanding. Because my point here, and I we do want to prepare students for all possible outcomes. But a point I've made in the past is that if we were to get on an airplane, we would want that airplane designed by more than stewardesses and ticket agents. The stewardess and ticket agent know how to deliver the ride. They don't necessarily know how to build the airplane. And I am an educator, and I know that educators do better than anybody on the planet in delivering knowledge. But I also know that in terms of what knowledge is necessary, teachers are so focused on what they're doing that there isn't that good broad knowledge as to what knowledge is necessary. One thing I could point to is that you drive up any up and down any street in any fair-sized town in Alaska, you'll see small business. And yet I don't see anything in the current or proposed standards that would actually directly speak to entrepreneurship. And even though our students might not become entrepreneurs, they certainly will be working for a small business, and I think they need a very good understanding of what it is to work for a small business in Alaska. So, again, I think educators do a wonderful job in delivering knowledge. What I'm questioning and what I'd like to see, and if we had a committee that vetted standards and they said these are great standards, I'd be thrilled. I'd do somersaults and we could all be happy. Because, I helped write two iterations of standards previous to this, and I know the work we put into that. And if somebody were threatening my work in that regard, I'd be pretty threatened. I mean, I know how much work goes into that. Wordsmithing and periods and commas, I know how detailed that gets. But so my intent isn't to undo what others have done, but my real intent here is to make sure that when students in a classroom are looking at what they're doing and any given day, they can see a clear pathway between that day and a career, some career that they may want, whether they're the miner running the jackhammer or whether the engineer telling the miner to where to drill. I believe we need to have a clear pathway for students. I personally believe that's one of the main reasons why we have maybe a third of our students dropping out, is because they do not see that pathway between what they're doing today and what they perceive they may be needing down the road. Mm-hmm. They don't see any adults doing those things that we're doing in the classroom. They don't see them using it in their real life. And I believe that's the level, and congratulate him, I didn't use the word relevant. That's the level on which many of our students function, and that's what I'm striving for here. I'm not trying to undo other people's work because I know the pain they put into that. Any other comment? Okay, I do have a question. No Child Left Behind. To what extent are we under pressure to adopt the proposed standards in order to get a waiver to No Child Left Behind? Are we seeking a waiver, and if we don't comply with No Child But Left Behind, how much dollar sign is that going to cost us?
Chair Dick, the development of our standards has not been pressured by No Child Left Behind. We are currently in the process of aligning what it would take. There's a lot of history behind the waiver issue. And very briefly, the bar gets raised in No Child Left Behind until everybody has to be proficient, in 2014. So the United States Department of Education has said we'll offer some waivers, but there's a separate set of accountability criteria involved in that. So we're in our department. I put some self-imposed deadlines on us. We meet again, I think, this week or next to determine where we are in regards to those criteria if we want to apply for a waiver in regards to that. So so there hasn't been pressure in regard to these standards. I would say that if we if SB 330 passes, it will preclude us from even applying for a waiver. So we won't be able to apply for a waiver because one of the criteria is that you have to have college and career-ready standards. And the current standards we have now would not be deemed high enough to apply for a waiver. So that doesn't mean that we're in the process of determining if we move forward. The deadline was yesterday. The second rolling deadline was yesterday to apply for waivers. The next one is in September. So I've spoken to the governor, and we're just trying to decide where we will be and what do we need to do prior to September to move forward. But this would not allow us to move forward with a waiver.
And if I could, I need information on this. I'm scrambling right to catch up. And I know, like, if we were to get the waiver, one of the things that would be at least objectionable for me with that waiver would be that our teacher evaluation would be linked to student performance. Is that correct?
That is correct, and that is why we're moving very deliberately forward. And very briefly, we understand the challenge we have, especially in rural Alaska, but in Alaska in general, of retaining good teachers. If we had a model that was very prescriptive and it said 50% of your evaluation will be based on your student achievement, and your student achievement will be based on their test score. Well, now we've just traded out one NCLB model for another one, and we won't get teachers to go to challenging schools. So if we do it, we have to have something that's honest. We have to use multiple methods of assessing students.
I like that.
And we can't just base it on test scores. If it were up to me at this point, I wouldn't make it prescriptive that a certain percentage of your evaluation, I'd say they need to be considered. They need to be a part of a conversation. But it needs to be an honest model. So I've had conversations with Barb Angayak at NEA, and so I think that's where the country is going anyway. But I don't know that necessarily affects what's on the table here. But it is the reason we have not just jumped on it and said, yes, we're going to get a waiver, because that is something that needs to be done right, not fast.
I see the waiver is out of the frying pan into the blast furnace. So, Representative Wilson?
Thank you. I think the committee needs to dwell just for a little bit on the fact that Washington doesn't accept what we're doing now, and that our standards aren't good enough. And so we all want it to be better than it is. Obviously, if it's not good enough, I mean, it's kind of like that they're going to take over the state of Alaska, and they're going to tell us what to do because they don't think we're doing a good enough job. And so when you worked on the standards, you looked at the difference. So now, can you just tell me, did you just raise the standards? I mean, what makes the standards that you've got out now for public comment, what makes those standards different from what we have right now? Because you've had to work real hard to make some changes. Can you just tell me overall what the differences are?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson. Yes, the foundation of understanding when we adopted, we started revising our standards, was recognition that 64% of our students who go to the university at this point need remediation. That's been a concern, that we're having employers saying they don't have the basic skills that they need. We look at our national scores, and the one test that allows us to compare ourselves with others is called the NAEP, N-A-E-P, the NAEP test. And our fourth graders are in the bottom 10th percent. I mean, we're 46th. Now it moves up to 26th in eighth grade, and that's the only places we take that test, fourth and eighth grade. So we recognize that we're not measuring up with what's taking place outside of Alaska. This is not a means to say we want to do it like everybody else, but it is a recognition that, especially in education, And in a global and shrinking world, our kids have to be able to compete on that level. So the national set of standards that went for, they're not really a national set, but they are a set of standards that 44 states adopted called the Common Core. We did reference those to say what is the rest of the country identifying as what is important. And there was a lot of work done in that regard. We referenced our standards to those. Some of them are identical because a good standard is a good standard. Other places we said, you know, we want to make some adjustments. But I am confident that our standards match the rigor of what's being taught in the rest of the country so that our kids can compete. And it also extends it beyond 10th grade. You know, our current standards only go to 10th grade, and now we've got them up to 12th grade. So I hate to oversimplify, but right now our standards may take a student to Algebra 1. The new standards will take them to Algebra 1.5 or closer to 2. That's oversimplified and just an example in math, but it does extend them and allows our students to go a little farther.
In oversimplifying, does it really take them higher than 1.5 algebra? I'm hoping it does.
Yes, it does. Yeah. And that's just, like I have to show you specific skills on where we're taking our kids farther so that we can compete, so that we're not at the bottom, and our kids can stand side by side with anybody in the country.
Okay. Can I follow up here?
Okay.
The reason I want to follow up is because I want to make sure if the people that develop these standards feel we've really brought them up good enough that we're not going to have to see the remediation every time somebody goes to the university. And, I mean, obviously, if you have kids that can't read when they're in high school, that's pretty pathetic. So I'm really happy to hear what you're saying. And I still go back to the reason I wanted to see the difference between the standards and the curriculum is because we can change the curriculum to meet Alaska people. I mean, we can change, and that's where I'm thinking that we can put in the into the curriculum
exactly.
The things that I think you want in this bill. I think we could adjust the curriculum in each school to speak the language that the kids need to hear so that they are interested, so that it makes sense to them and they can see hope. I mean, I'm thinking anytime we can give hope to a child, it turns on something that's not turned on, and so we have to have that. And I think what the curriculum is and how the teachers teach can make a big difference in that. And
you know, Representative Wilson, I have that part as part of my presentation.
Okay.
So maybe if we do that. Commissioner Hanley, two issues. If there's any time you want to testify on this, on whatever we're doing in regards to HB 330, you're welcome. And I guess I maybe offer an apology if, like last meeting when we discussed this, if I thought you might want to hear the testimony and then you would testify afterward. But if at any point your schedule is such that you would like to testify first, middle, or last, you tell us and we'll accommodate you in that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I knew the schedule, so I was aware of that. Okay. And I would say in regards to NCLB, just a side note, it's relatively complex. There's a lot we're doing as a state, and I'd be glad to – this wouldn't be the place to probably do that, but I'd be glad to – if you have questions specifically about it, I'd be glad to meet you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Yes. Okay, I'm going to hand the gavel to Representative Pruitt, and actually have enough time this time.
At ease? Well, he gets set up. On the record. State your affiliation and proceed with your testimony.
For the record, I'm Representative Alan Dick, District 6, and member of this committee. I believe I have my ducks in a row this time, and if we take a look at the this handout, I highlighted the parts that we might want to pay attention to. It's by the Brown Center on Education Policy at Brookings Institute, which is highly respected. If we could turn to page 3, and I've pulled all of this, so we only have to look at highlights. Page 3, and this is Representative Wilson. This is in reference to the Common Core standards, and it talks about whether the rigor of standards actually address student performance. And on page 3, you'll see by number 1, it says, despite all the money and effort devoted to developing the Common Core state standards, not to mention the simmering controversy over their adoption in several states, the study foresees little or no impact on student learning. Turning the page, number 2, data on the effects of those standards are analyzed to produce 3 findings. 1, the quality of state standards, as indicated by well-known ratings from Fordham Foundation, is not related to state achievement. 2, the rigor of state standards as measured by how high states place the cut point for students to be deemed proficient is also unrelated to achievement. And 3, the ability of standards to reduce variation in achievement, in other words, to reduce differences in achievement, is also weak. We could turn over to page 7, number 3. And it says that the push for common education standards argues that all American students should study a common curriculum, take comparable tests to measure their learning, and have the results interpreted on a common scale. The common curriculum, comparable tests, and standardized performance lessons is necessary. No one or two of them can stand alone for the project to succeed. Turning the page over to page 8 and number 4, there's 3 theorized effects of these Common Core standards. 4A, let's call the quality theory. The theory is that achievement will increase because students will study a better curriculum. 4B, second idea is the Common Core sets a higher expectation than current standards, the assumption being that cut points on the new assessment will be set at a higher level than states currently set on their own tests. And 4C, the third hypothesis is that standardization yields its own efficiencies, kind of the economy of scale. If you look at the bottom of page 8, number 5, Andrew Porter, and this refers to the international, comparing standards, test scores internationally. Andrew Porter compared the Common Core to existing state standards and international standards from other countries and concluded the Common Core does not represent much improvement. So, on the bottom of page 9, you'll see number 6 on the right side. It says that where the quality rating for standards is judged by the 2 most cited ratings from the American Federation of Teachers and Fordham Foundation are correlated with state NAEP scores, and that NAEP test is the one the commissioner just referred to. That's the measure by which we determine whether our students are doing well compared to the rest of the nation. Whitehurst found that they are not. Let me repeat that again. Where the quality ratings for state standards is judged by the 2 most cited ratings are correlated with state NAEP scores. Whitehurst found they are not. States with weak content standards score about the same on the NAEP as those with strong standards. And it goes on to tell the years where those studies were done. If we could turn to page 10. And at the bottom of page 10, lower left, it said, according to the Fordham, some states improved their standards in 2006, while others adopted weaker standards in 2006 than they had back in 2000. Are changes in the quality of standards related to changes in achievement? Again, the answer is that they are not. Correlation coefficient of 0.08. And states with higher, number 8, states with higher, more rigorous cut points did not have stronger NAEP scores than states with less rigorous cut points. Number 9, on page 11, did states that raised the bar also perform better, and did states that lower the bar perform worse? Correlation coefficients for 8th grade are near zero. And number 10, on that same page, the third theory concerns standardization. For the Common Core movement, attaining greater standardization of education outcome is important. The one size fits all for the nation. And the 2 process analysis indicate that it is unlikely that common standards will boost performance. However, it's possible for the national average to remain stable while variation is reduced. Number 11, in terms of state NAEP scores, variation comes in 2 forms, variation between states and variation within the state. Number 12, within state variation remains unaffected by common standards. 12A, despite that, every state has tremendous within-state variation in achievement. Scores that are at the top of the world on international, turning the page, assessment are within a short car trip, sometimes even with a short subway ride, from schools that score at the lower level of the world's lowest achieving nations. 12B, findings are clear. Most variation on NAEP occurs within states, not between them. The variation within states is 4 to 5 times larger than variation between states. Number 13, what effect will the Common Core have on national achievement? The analysis presented here suggests very little impact. Turning the page, number 13, two lessons can be drawn from the analysis. First, do not expect much from the Common Core. 15, standards in education are best understood as aspirational, and like a strict diet or prudent plan to save money for the future, they represent good intentions that are not often realized. And under 15.1, we'll see that there's intended standards, implemented standards, and achieved. Distinctions are drawn among the intended, implemented, and achieved curriculum. Excuse me, not standards. Intended curriculum is embodied by standards. It's what the governments want students to learn. 15.2, what is crucial is the distance between the intended curriculum, that is, what we as a state are going to say we want every child to learn, and the two curriculums below. The implemented is what teachers teach. That's 15.2. 15.3, the attained curriculum is what students learn. Jumping down to 16, the Common Core will probably fail to dramatically affect what goes on in the thousands of districts and tens of thousands of schools that they seek to influence. Turning the page, number 17, and it says, just as the glow of consensus surrounding No Child Left Behind faded after a few years, cracks are now appearing in the wall of support for the Common Core. Don't let the ferocity of the oncoming debate fool you. The empirical evidence suggests that the Common Core will have little effect on American students' achievement. The nation will have to look elsewhere for ways to improve school. Maybe they're going to look to the House Education Committee in Alaska. We'll see. I believe that's pretty powerful, and you need to read it for yourself. But I wanted us to at least have get the 30,000-foot view on that. And I would like to thank Senator Thomas's staff for pointing that Brookings Institute study out to me. Now, if the committee could turn to this page here that's in your handouts, and we have had questions in the past. This one here. About what are content standards, what are performance standards, and what are GLEs, or grade level expectations. So I wanted to address that. So I took this out of the existing standards. I just chose some out of somewhere. And we'll see under A, the content standard is the student should understand mathematical facts, concepts, principles, and theories. That's the overarching concept. And under the performance standard, you could see 6, will collect, organize, analyze, interpret, represent, and formulate questions about data and make reasonable and useful predictions about the certainty, uncertainty, or impossibility of an event. Okay, so those are the content and performance standards. The performance standard is what a student will perform as a result of the generalized content standard. Now, if a teacher were to address this, the teacher would turn to, and you could turn your page to here. Oh, let's see. Yeah, you could turn to page in the bottom corner. It says 97. And in the upper corner here, we see the content standard A, mathematical facts, concepts, principles, and theories. And the subset of that is statistics and probability. Off to the right, you'll see where it gives the grade level expectations of grade 7 and grades 7 and 8 and 9 and 10. And the understanding in Alaska are expectations only up to 10. Doing good. So if we could turn the page on the back side here, you will see these are the grade level expectations for grade 10 And it says that a student demonstrates an ability to analyze data, comparing, explaining, interpreting, evaluating, making predictions, describing trends, drawing, formulating, or justifying conclusions by. And then this is more specific. This is the grade level expectation for the students at the 10th grade, and you can look at 9th grade and 8th grade. Believe me, there's a lot of work that goes into these. And we could drop down to the bottom. It said, under probability, said the student demonstrates a conceptual understanding of probability and counting techniques by. And this is at grade 10 what that student will be able to do. And in the grade 10, they're explaining in words or identifying the difference between experimental and theoretical probability of independent or dependent events. And it goes on saying analyzing data to make predictions about probability of independent or dependent events as a basis for solving real-world problems. I like that. So I just brought this to the committee for your understanding that there's an overarching concept. There's a performance standard that says the student will perform. And there's a grade level expectation, and that is the grade level at which the student will perform increments of that or that performance standard. Is there any Representative
Seaton? No.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 98, we're looking at, it says, it identifies these all by the grade, and then it says S&P 2, 3, 4. What does that S&P stand for?
I believe it's statistics and probability. Statistics and probability, I'm sure it is.
Yes, statistics.
Yes, it is. If we look at the top of page 97,
yeah,
it says statistics and probability performance standards to apply to grades 9 to 10.
Thanks.
And I can't remember what these all these numbers. There was some code in there that we wrote to, we all wrote to ourselves. And teachers that are current would understand that. I apologize for not being current on the 4.5 or whatever, but those... I wanted the committee to understand that is the general idea. You have an overarching concept. You have a performance standard that says we will be able to see the student perform, and then the great GLEs, grade level expectations, is what they will perform at each different level. Okay?
Representative Wilson.
Thank you. So the teacher looks at that and says, I got to figure out how to do this.
And I've often said that David Copperfield can make the Empire State Building vanish, but he doesn't have enough magic to turn some of these into really interesting lessons. I don't think he has enough magic to do that. It's really difficult. It was really hard. I watched in Barrow their model was, they said, what does a whole Inupiat person look like? And they defined that. And then they reverse engineered that, and that became their curriculum. And then they showed us, they demonstrated for us, where they had to align that, you know, what does the whole person look like, with the state standards. And for me, it was kind of like watching a English-speaking person translate German into Chinese. It was so hard to do. And I can tell you from my own experience, turning performance standards into grade-level expectations is pretty hard as well.
Go ahead, Representative Wilson.
Is the curriculum that vague also?
Well, the curriculum is chosen by the districts, and the districts, okay. this is what the department is always very, very adamant about, that we will align the curriculum to standards. Yeah. And that was my question before. If somebody in, say, Hooper Bay decides that we can have the best teacher in Alaska in Hooper Bay teaching this, explaining in words or identifying the difference between experimental and theoretical probability of independent and dependent events. That teacher could teach extremely well and do the best he or she could ever imagine, and yet that may or may not be the same as the people who developed the SBA, and we could actually have the kid get the wrong answer and look bad on the test when actually we have the best teacher in the world. So my problem was, I think we ought to align the curriculum to standards. We certainly should, but we also need to make sure that the assessment by on the SBA test is aligning with what the teachers, the formative and summative evaluations the teachers are using. A formative is evaluation, just a test, quiz or a test, while the students are forming the understanding. The summative would be like a unit test or a midterm exam. That's summarizing what the students understand. So I'd like to see the state take some formative and summative evaluations and compare them with the SBA and see whether we're talking the same language. I mean, if I said dog, you know, and we could all draw a different picture, and we'd all come up with different dogs. And my question is, what makes us sure that the guy in wherever these people designed these tests in Lower 48 are seats drawing the same dog as somebody in New Namiqua? That is my question.
Okay. Mr. Representative Seaton.
I guess I'm struggling with the concept of having integrated, or not integrated, but teachers utilizing curriculum that are relevant to the students to teach a concept, and then saying that we're going to have an assessment that, I mean, the only way to get that assessment that I can see to the curriculum is that everybody teaches exactly the same curriculum, if you want to tie those two together. And so I'm not sure why, if the assessment is assessing the principle that's being taught, how that is constrained by allowing variability among teachers to teach in a way that's relevant to students in different classes, the principles. And if that's what you're assessing, so I guess I'm having trouble fitting the two concepts that you're espousing, one having assessment of what is taught and also giving flexibility for teachers to teach in different ways the principles that are in the standards and the GLEs. And I think I'm hearing you say that everyone should have to teach exactly the same, because our assessment, our statewide assessment, can only work if everyone has been taught exactly the same. And I don't think that's what you've been meaning at all.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I'm saying that the 7,000 teachers in Alaska that struggle with the same question you are, that if a 10th grade math teacher looks at this and spends Sunday afternoon trying to figure out how to turn that into something that's related to, you know, HUNA or GNOME or wherever, that the curriculum and the pedagogy that goes into teaching this is really up to the discretion of the teacher in the district. We never want to go there. We don't want a curriculum with that script. I've seen the curriculum with scripts in it. We never want to go there. And I'm just saying that there is a struggle that goes on. And I have to confess, I picked one of the more abstract ones to make my point. No, I'm not suggesting standard curriculum at all.
Okay.
I guess one of the things I would like to see vetted, and we'll look at the new standards here really quickly, and one of the things I'd like to see is I'd like to see the standards written in a way that the common parents could read them and understand what it is the students are supposed to be doing, instead of this. I mean, I'm a teacher, and I'll tell you, I've struggled with a lot of this. Just the way it's written, I understand it's written that way to be very concise, but I'd like... I need clarification, and I believe you're talking about new teachers struggling and out in isolation. They all struggle. I think 7,000 teachers in Alaska struggle with this.
Chair Dick, I'm going to ask a question, then I'll ask, because we have people on board and I'll be able to hear if we could then move on. But the question I'll ask is, and maybe I'm kind of oversimplifying everything here, but when was the last time that we changed the standards here in Alaska? It was 06. Do we have ADD? I mean, you just mentioned that it's complicated for some of these teachers out in the rural areas to grasp what we're talking about here. But I wouldn't be able to grasp if we keep changing stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, we keep changing maybe we need to take a root cause analysis and kind of pull a business standard to it, and you know, look at, okay, where are the distractions? Is it, should we prevent kids from having their cell phones on their person in school or something? But it'd be really tough for me if they're already having a difficult time changing it, and we're going to change it every couple of years. Maybe that's what's complicating some of this.
Superintendent McDonald from Kodiak asked us that very thing. He said, don't make us hit a moving target. He said that exact thing.
Well, and I'm obviously, I just kind of wanted to get your view on it, because I think maybe I'm oversimplifying it, but that's one of the concerns that I have, is that maybe we've got to give it enough time to see if we can see the results from certain changes. So I'll just make that comment. Representative Wilson, do you have a comment?
I was just wondering why we changed them in 2006. Was it because of NCS, No Child Left Behind?
I'm not the one to ask that. Perhaps next time Commissioner Hanley testifies, we could save that question for him. Although he wasn't commissioner at the time, but I bet he has the answer for that.
And I say that, Chair, that not as a discussion towards the department, but just kind of a step back. And again, maybe I'm oversimplifying it, but that's the question I have: is why have we changed in the last 10 years as much as we have? Maybe so. Anyways, I'll leave it at that. If you have some more, please continue. Otherwise, we do have some.
If we could turn to this page here, and I cut and pasted these. Took me hours, and of course I picked the ones that were more obtuse, but but they do make a point. And if we could take a look at page one, every one of them with a checkpoint. Let me first read the first paragraph. Alaska High School Mathematics Standards. High school standards specify the mathematics that all students should study in order to be career ready. Additional mathematics the student should learn in order to take advanced courses such as calculus, advanced statistics, or discrete mathematics is indicated by the symbol plus. So everything without a plus sign, do you have that? Do we have this one? Okay. Everything without a plus sign, every child will do this. Every student will do this. It'll be on the SBA. It'll be on the SBA. It'll be on the HSGQE. And we'll test every student in this. And I'll just read through a couple of them. Verify experimentally the properties of dilations given by a center and a scale factor. A dilation takes a line not passing through the center of the dilation to a parallel line and leaves a line passing through the center unchanged. Okay. I went down here, and under number three, you see a question mark. Complete the square and a quadratic expression to reveal the maximum minimum value of the function it defines. For example, x squared plus 4x plus 3 is equal to x plus 2 parentheses squared minus 1. And you can see where I multiplied it out there, and I finally understood it. But after I understood it, I don't understand. And one of the criticisms I heard from a lot of teachers here is these aren't standards. This is curriculum. Because, Representative Wilson, it's really the degree of specificity is just another level of specificity, if you don't mind. But if we could turn to page two here, and looking at the top, every child, there's no plus sign beside this. No, there's a complex number I such that I squared equals a negative 1, and every complex number has a form A plus BI with A and B real. And to use the relation I squared equals negative 1 and the commutative associative distributive properties to add, subtract, and multiply complex numbers. We could skip page. I'm not trying to bore you with this. But we could choose anything here. Maybe on page 3, we have every high school student doing trigonometry. And under number 2, under trigonometric functions, explain how the unit circle in the coordinate plane enables the extension of trigonometric functions to all real numbers interpreted as radian measures of angles transverse counterclockwise around the unit circle. We're going to have every student do this. If the special ed kids don't get it, don't graduate. So, we could turn on... if we go to page 4, proven geometric theorems, you'll notice there's no plus sign here. so that every student will do this. Using methods of proof, including direct, indirect, and counterexamples, to prove theorems about lines and angles. Theorems include vertical angles are congruent when transversal crosses parallel lines, alternate interior angles are congruent, and corresponding angles are congruent. Points in a perpendicular bisector of a line segment are exactly those equidistant from the segment's endpoints. So that was just a sample. And if you turn to page 5, I'm not going to beat this one to death here, but okay, we're doing good. Okay, page 5, I would like to point out that and page 5 in the middle, this is grade 8. It refers to analyze and solve linear equations in pair of simultaneous linear equations. And if I remember, maybe 1962, my junior year of high school, this is about a third of the way through Algebra 2, and we have eighth graders doing this now. Now, I'd like to refer you back to the Brookings Institute comment here that the standards aren't a vacuum cleaner. By having higher standards, you don't suck students up. The student performance is linked to many other things that are desperately important, but having higher standards are not a vacuum cleaner. That's the point I'd like to make. So I just want to give in, I promise by next committee meeting or even afterwards, I'll do the same thing for the language standards and show how realistic or unrealistic they might be. I would like to point you to, we could shift subject a little bit to this handout I have here.
And Representative Seaton.
These are standards. Are these conduct standards? Are they performance standards? Are they... The last one must be GLEs, but what are...
Those are GLEs. I don't... These are GLEs. And but understanding that the new standards would reach up into the 12th grade, that they don't stop at the 10th grade. But we could also point again to the fact that where we're doing simultaneous equations in the 8th grade. Okay, if we could turn to this page, I tried to come up with a way to that we could visualize what we're doing here. And at this point, I'm getting off of the standards themselves and just talking about the finances involved. If you look at that bottom line, the department told me that it was roughly $270,000 to develop the standards that we just saw the highlights from. $270,000, a lot of work, and it's a considerable amount of money. But if you, I try to get somewhere to visualize this, if you look at the line above it, you'll see that the assessment tools, according to the department, it would cost between $5 and $7 million to develop assessment tools, including this SBAs and HSGQE test. So that is to say, on top of this very small foundation, $270,000, it's going to cost us $5 to $7 million to develop the assessment tools to assess how well students are doing on those standards. And then if you look at the lines above that, and we usually go in six-year cycles for adopting standards. It's roughly a $7 million annual cost of assessment. So that's approximately $40 million would be spent over 6 years to assess how well the students do on these standards that cost us $270,000 to develop. Now, I have a line of question marks because I have no idea how much it would cost the state or the districts to get new textbooks and curriculum to match the new standards that we're about to adopt. And I have no idea, again, how much teacher professional development would be involved, teacher training would be involved, and having the teachers actually align their new curriculum to the new standards. I have no idea how much that is, so I just put a serious question mark. And then I had no idea how to illustrate $1 billion compared to roughly $250,000, so I just put some big lines on the top. And each one of these represents $1.2 billion every year we spend on education. And as the commissioner said last week, these standards are foundational for our educational system. Their foundation, they're the foundation. And so what I've said all along is that we have this very narrow foundation, and I believe it's a broken foundation, and we're building a massive superstructure on top of that foundation, and that's what concerns me. If we could turn to the next page, and if I have the facts, and I believe Diane Behrens is with us, so Diane, if you correct me after the meeting, I try to illustrate where our students are going. And my point is this. The bottom line represent 100% of all ninth graders. One-third of those on the right side, you'll see one-third of the students are dropping out. The rest of them are high school graduates. Two-thirds of our ninth graders become high school graduates. If I understood Diane Behrens correctly, there was 40% of the students that graduate from high school actually go on to some type of future education. So 60% of the students do not go on. They just go on into careers. Of those 40%, we were not able to break out the ones who went to certificate, a two-year degree, or started a four-year degree and dropped out. But we do know that of the high school graduates, that 7% of our ninth graders actually graduate from 4 years of college after 6 years. So, my point is this. I believe that these standards, if my student, my child was going to college, wanted to aspire to go to college, I'd want my child to have these standards. I want them to know how to do simultaneous equations in the eighth grade and know how to do all these things described. But I think what we have standards that are aimed at an elite group of people, the 7% that are actually going on to college. And that's what troubles me, because everybody else is in some way or another collateral damage to the system. Now, most of the people making the decisions have a college degree, so we have a hard time imagining somebody being successful and not being like us. And yet, if we look, we can see there's many people that are more successful than we are, even though we have a college degree. So the point I'm trying to make here is that we really do want good standards. I don't believe that, I believe that whatever standards we do adopt, they need to be the best we can, because for 6 years, our student success and with dropout rate, everything is going to be linked to the quality of standards. And not only that, but the finances that we're going to build upon that very narrow foundation is going to be massive. And my suggestion is that if we do it, we've got to be absolutely sure we're doing it right. Now,
Mr. Chair, I'd also like to make sure that you recognize there's 5 minutes.
Okay.
And we have three people online, and I think it's probably good to note to the next bill that we probably won't be getting to it, so if you have some other things to do, you might feel free to step out. Go ahead, Representative Dick.
Yeah. Thank you. I apologize for the – I promise the next bill will be heard. But I do want to say that and I pointed out, and I believe you have in your packet, that the people who are involved in the designing of these standards, I have yet to see what I would perceive to be a meaningful involvement by people of industry. And that's what this HB 330 does, is it says that we will come up, the task force will devise a system by which standards will forever be vetted and make sure that industry is involved in those, in those standards. And if I could have my way, if I could wave a magic wand, I would like to have one criteria that every standard would have to meet, and that is that every standard would have to have a demonstrable real-life application. I believe at the root of our dropout rate and the root of the whole issue of students not being engaged is the fact that they do not see the connection between what they're being taught and their real life. In which case, I see if I can't see the connection between these standards and real life, I can't imagine how somebody in a village or even in Fairview could see that connection. So, with that, I'll close.
Mr. Chair, is it okay if we move straight to the public testimony of the individuals who are online?
I have no problem with that.
Okay. What we will do is go ahead and start with Mr. Jack Walsh. Mr. Walsh from Bissell Bay comes online. Mr. Chair, if you'll come back and take your place as chair. Mr. Walsh, are you there?
I am here.
Please proceed with your testimony. State your name as well as your affiliation.
Sure. My name is Jack Walsh. I'm the superintendent of the Bristol Bay School District in Mackinac, Alaska. I'm also a 25-year resident of Alaska who's, you know, served as a teacher in two other districts and an administrator in another district as well. I do appreciate the time that the committee has. I will keep my comments short. I have just heard you say that you have about 5 minutes left. You know, I really wanted to make sure that I was available to talk about the House Bill 330 from a perspective of a superintendent in a school district in rural Alaska that is actually performing fairly well as far as our districts go. We are a school district of only 150 students and only 15 teachers. We experience the same high turnover that other districts in rural Alaska deal with because of a number of compelling issues. But, you know, I heard over and over this morning the number of times that people talked about being careful not to oversimplify things. So I know I have that ability to do the same thing. But just again, to kind of, in the interest of time, I just wanted to say that I'm fearful that House Bill 330 operates from a view of a couple flawed assumptions. One of them is that the department is failing in their duty to the children of the state and to the school district, and the other one being that the schools are failing. And I don't think either one of them is a real true picture. I'm concerned that from the opening lines of the bill where it talks about shifting responsibilities to the Department of Education to the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, again, it's a situation that may not be in the best interest of either the departments as well as the Alaskan public, because I do believe that the people with the greatest experience in standards, and I do believe the people with the greatest ability to kind of identify what it is that we're looking for as students graduate from high school, may be somewhere within the Department of Education, and I, apologize to people that feel otherwise. I do think that the process that the department went through, and I did not participate in this process on these standards. I have participated in other standard development processes, you know, in the involvement of 50-plus people. I have to apologize. I'm going by a June 2011 State Board of Education, packet that I saw that talked about the timeline they had already begun and that what they were hoping to accomplish. I do believe that the opening it up to 50 different people is something that really does increase the capacity of the committee to come up with standards that can be have the most positive effect on the greatest number of kids. I'd be cautious to agree that, these standards were only set for the 7% that went from ninth grade to college graduation in a certain number of years, because I don't believe that to be true. I think, a number of my graduates go right into the family businesses and industries around fishing industry and tourism and may never attend a college or any other kind of schooling. And yet, I find that many of them are very successful in doing exactly what they had hoped to do at some point. And their preparation in our district has really made them well situated for being successful there. Again, I do appreciate the time and effort and energy that's gone into this process. I am concerned that, our state standards, as we review them regularly and we update them, one day that may be a moot process and it may be something that the federal government steps in and puts more pressure on us to comply with what they want to do. But I also want to recognize that in a district in rural Alaska, where in the last couple of years we've had, upwards of 80% and 90% of our students performing as proficient in language arts, and that includes our Native Alaskan group, our economically disadvantaged group, our Caucasian students, and others. A district that has probably about 70% of our students performing above proficiency in math, you do keep in mind that there are a great number of districts and a great number of schools where really good things are happening because of the standards and because of the effort that our families, our students, and our staffs are making to make sure we best prepare students for a future that we're really not certain what it might include. But, you know, it is something that I think we take seriously, and we'll continue to do that. So I do appreciate the time, and I'll stop there.
Okay. Jack, this is Representative Alan Dick, and you never have to apologize for disagreeing, sir. That's what this whole process is about. We do have two other people online, and we are over time. We do need to, but this will, the public, this was just, public testimony is just starting. And I'd like to remind people that public testimony isn't a tug of war. It doesn't matter how, it's both right and wrong. And it doesn't matter. The number of people calling in isn't going to make that as much difference as the clarity of the discussion and the importance of what people do have to say. So we do need to adjourn here Friday, March 2, 8 a.m. This room will hear Superintendent presentation from Skagway School District, HB 313, Student Town Estimates, and HB 256, State Intervention in Schools. And, okay, and I promise the, yeah, we will hear the bill. What was that number?
House Bill 272.
We will hear that. We will hear HB 272. I promise that. Okay, with no further business, we're adjourned.